In the year 2000, scientists completed the first map of the human genome. And it was interesting. I remember watching the television releases where then-President Bill Clinton went on national television with two scientists and they announced this discovery. And many people were upset by this discovery for a couple of different reasons. One of the reasons is that scientists had believed that between 100,000 and 140,000 genes were required to make us who we are today as a species, to give us our uniqueness. However, what the studies found and what the genome map showed is that we only have about 30,000 genes. 30,000 genes. And what really upset some people was that of those 30,000 genes, there were fewer than 300 that separate us from a field mouse, or a fruit fly, or a worm in the earth. Fewer than 300 genes set us apart from all other life. So the question is, what is it that makes us so different? What is it that really sets us apart from other life? Well, when you speak to scientists about who we are in our past, many scientists will look at the physical record, the fossil record, and now that the study of DNA has been developed to the degree that it has, we can actually use what is being called archaeological DNA or genetic archaeology. We can trace our lineage and our ancestry back through the DNA itself, and even those studies are offering surprising and to some people very unexpected results. For example, if we have, as many scientists believe, descended from earlier forms of primates, when we find the DNA of earlier primates and it's preserved, it should closely resemble ours and we should be able to trace that lineage. Well, I'm going to share a remarkable discovery, and I'm not sure why this discovery didn't make the front page news of Time magazine and USA Today. In 1987, scientists discovered the body of a very well-preserved infant, a Neanderthal infant, in a limestone cave in northern Europe. This is very, very interesting. The body was not mummified. It wasn't frozen. It wasn't fossilized. It was simply preserved in the cool, dry air of this cave underground. And it was preserved so well, they were able to carbon date her remains and found that this infant, this young Neanderthal girl, was 30,000 years old. 30,000 years old, and she was in such good condition that even her DNA was preserved. So for the first time in modern times, scientists could take samples of DNA from this 30,000-year-old Neanderthal infant and compare them to our modern DNA today. And if we have, in fact, evolved from these earlier forms of life, we should see that connection. Well, in the year 2000, scientists at the University of Glasgow's Human Identification Center tested that Neanderthal DNA against modern human DNA. The bottom line, this is a direct quote from the study that was released in the very prestigious journal Nature in March of 2000. The bottom line says, the results suggest that modern human was not, in fact, descended from Neanderthals. In 2004, further studies in London from the National History Museum obtained an additional 24 samples from Neanderthals of our past and compared those samples to the DNA of 40 early humans that are recognized as humans today, and they found the same thing. This is a quote. None of the five DNA samples taken from early modern humans contained sequences corresponding to those of Neanderthals. This was released in Science News, March 2004. So what are these studies saying to us? Well, while they answer some questions in some respects, in other respects, they're raising additional questions. If we did not descend from those Neanderthals that we believe were part of our lineage, where did we come from? How did we get to be the way we are today? Many scientists, many colleagues of mine, when I ask this question, they refer to the fossil record. And even the fossil record, as of 2003, has beginning to show new discoveries that are asking more questions, perhaps, than they're answering. It is believed that evolution is responsible and has led to the changes in life that have allowed humankind to become the unique species that we are today, the Homo sapiens. in the circles of science, there's very little question that evolution in some way or another has occurred. We can see that evolution has occurred. Here's the question. The question is, does evolution alone explain the changes that have led to our uniqueness? One of the discoveries that recently was revealed was that remains, fossilized remains of humans that look just about like you and like me, fossilized remains of what are, for all intents and purposes, fully modern, fully developed humans, have now been found in the rock strata between 154 and 160,000 years old. We found fossils of ourselves 160,000 years old. This is important because if, as we have suspected in the past, this evolution is ongoing, the question is, why didn't we change over those last 160,000 years? It appears that what may have happened is that we have changed very little from the time that we first appeared in our world. So scientists now are looking at two possibilities. I'm going to share them with you in terms of who we are and how we relate to the world around us in terms of our origins. And the first possibility simply suggests that we all come from a common DNA. We have a common ancestor, and that somewhere along the evolutionary ladder, other primates separated from us, or we separated from them. So the gorillas and the chimps went on their way, and we began to climb this long evolutionary ladder that led to humankind as we know it today. And if this is true, then along that ladder, we should be able to find fossilized remains of the different stages that we went through. This is the search for the missing link. So this is possibility one, that we came from a common DNA, and at some point we separated. The term is bifurcation, and we began our journey on our evolutionary ladder separate from other primates. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two suggests that we came from a common genetic ancestor, and almost immediately something happened. Some mysterious process happened, and we became as we are a long time ago and really haven't changed much between now and then. That the other primates became as they are, we became as we are, and that we really haven't changed much between now and then. We don't know the answer to these two questions. We don't know precisely where we came from or who we are, but this is what the evidence is showing us. While we may have evolved separately from other forms of life, we do share a genetic history with them. So the question is, what happened to us? What happened in our ancient past to produce the changes in the code of life that make us who we are today? Well, science can only tell us the what. They cannot tell us the why. What science says is that the physical evidence that we now have in our hands states that humankind underwent a mysterious process in our past, and that our bodies have in fact changed very little in the last 160,000 years. If you were to walk this earth 100,000 years ago, you would see people that look almost like you and me, certainly dressed differently. Their bodies would be very, very similar to what we see today. The why, in terms of what caused this to happen, science cannot say. We gain insight from the ancient texts and the traditions. And what those texts and traditions say almost universally, whether we're talking about the indigenous people of the Andes of Peru or Bolivia or South America or Australia, or in the traditions of the Chinese and the Tibetans, and Native American traditions of North America, all say something very similar. The insight from the ancient texts and traditions says that we were created. We were created by a greater intelligence, specifically for the purpose of holding what is called the spark, or the light, or the spirit, or the essence of God's soul in this world. We appear to be precisely that, the genetic recipe, what the ancients called the vessels or the temples, required for our soul to live in our bodies. And it's how we use the power of God within our bodies that separates us from other forms of life. So we just spent a few moments discussing what science has found with regards to our past, that our bodies may have changed very little over the last 160,000 years or so. What the texts say, that we were specifically created for the purpose of holding the soul or the spirit in our world. And I'd like to share another kind of evidence, certainly a very controversial piece of evidence, when taken by itself. However, when taken within the context of other discoveries, this piece of evidence may give even greater insight into who we are and how we work in our world. It is from a study that is ongoing, is best known under the umbrella that is called the Bible Code. The Bible Code. The Bible Code is a very mysterious set of codes based upon the Hebrew Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, that are subsequently the first five books of the Christian Old Testament. These five books, the Torah, we don't really know precisely even where they come from. They are believed to have been received by Moses approximately 3,200 to maybe 3,800 years ago, sometime during that time frame. And what makes these codes so interesting is that researchers now suggest that in the original form, the original Torah was a continuous string of characters, a continuous string of Hebrew letters with no punctuation, no space between the words, a continuous string of precisely 304,805 letters. The Torah is a very stable document. It has changed very, very little over the last 4,000 years or so. So when we see the ancient versions of the Torah, it's very, very similar to what we see today. Well, statisticians and researchers began working with the Torah from the perspective that perhaps it is a code of sorts that was left to us a long time ago. There are many stories in the traditions of the ancient scholars where they searched through a manual process. There were no computers hundreds of years ago. Through a manual process, looking for sequences of letters in hidden sequences in codes within the Torah itself. Well, it was in the 1990s, because of high-speed computers, that researchers could take these ideas and test them even a little further. And what they did was they took the Torah, the 304,805 letters, and placed them into rows, 64 rows of exactly 4,772 letters each to create a matrix. This is called the Torah matrix. And it's within this matrix that the scientists wrote the programs that would allow computers to search forward, backward, left to right, right to left, up and down, and diagonally in this matrix for very, very precise sequences of letters. It was believed that the ancient Torah was a map, if you will, of all of the possibilities that could play out in creation from the moment it was given to the people of the earth until what the ancients called the end of days on the earth. That all that was, all that would ever be, and all that had ever been, to quote the text itself, was contained as a map within the Torah. So for those who were uninitiated in the codes, when they would read the text themselves, what is called the plain texts, they would have the outer words. However, for those who understood the gematria and the codes as they were hidden within the Torah, they would have access to even deeper layers or hidden layers of text. For example, within the text, there is a theory that is called the skip, S-K-I-P, code, where every X number of letters reveals a hidden word or a sequence. So for example, if you go into the book of Genesis, in the Hebrew language, this only works in the Hebrew language, and you go through the letters until you find the first letter T, and you pull that out. And then you go another 50 letters, and you take that letter and pull it out. And another 50 letters, and take that letter and pull it out, and so on. What you'll find is that every 50 letters, when you pull them out, they actually spell the word Torah. And this is a code in the book of Genesis. The same code works in the book of Exodus. It works in the book of Numbers. It works in the book of Deuteronomy. Does not work in Leviticus. There's another story happening with Leviticus. What researchers say is that it is beyond chance or coincidence that by pulling out every 50 letters in the books of the Torah, we would spell the word Torah itself. This type of code is called a skip, S-K-I-P, a skip code, where we skip 50 letters, take one, skip 50 letters, take another one. And the way that scientists now and statisticians are researching the Torah is by building the computer programs that can skip many different kinds of letters, from 10 letters to maybe 100 letters, and everything in between, revealing the separate and the secret words and the sequences. For those who've never heard of this before, if you're interested in finding more about this, the landmark research paper was released in 1994, a fascinating title. It was called Equidistant Letter Sequences in the Book of Genesis. A fascinating paper by Whitsum, Riffs, Rosenberg, published in Statistical Science, 1994, Volume 9, Number 3, pages 429 to 438. So it is from these skip codes now that scientists have begun to reveal the hidden messages and the hidden language within the Torah itself. One of the first places in our recent history where the value of these codes came to light was during the time of the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Because what the researchers found was that by entering a certain number of skip codes into the Torah said that if Yitzhak Rabin were to give a speech on a certain day, at a certain time of day, at a certain location, that an assassin would take his life. The scientists took this information from the Torah to Yitzhak Rabin, who was a very spiritual man, and he believed in the power of the Torah, and he believed in what the Bible code was saying. And he also believed that if it was his time, it was his time, and he chose to go forward with his program that day. He left in his motorcade, he went to the precise place, the precise time of day, that the Torah said he would lose his life, and in that moment, a man named Amir, A-M-I-R, the name that was found in the Bible code, emerged and in fact took the life of Yitzhak Rabin on that day. And it was at this time, from this event, that the Israeli scientists began to take the Bible code very, very seriously. If you remember during the first Gulf War, when Iraq launched the Scud missiles into Israel, and how the Israelis did not retaliate during that time. And if you ever wondered why that is, one of the reasons is that upon consulting the Bible code said that if the Israelis had retaliated on that day, it would have put into motion a sequence of events that would have aligned religious traditions of Judeo-Christian against Islam and begun a great war. Having just seen what the Torah code said regarding Yitzhak Rabin, they chose not to go forward. And even today, the Bible code is consulted, not that it is the rule. It is consulted when decisions of great importance are being made in the Israeli government. Well, the reason I'm sharing all of this with you, the code itself, the code holds many secrets, many kinds of information. It's very specific. In the Bible code, we find the dates that World War I and World War II began, the dates that certain countries entered the wars, the names of the leaders of those countries. We also find very good things. It's not just about bad things. We find evidence of Princess Diana and the Super Bowl. Those kinds of things all are being played out in this code that is called the Bible Code. It is said that every human name ever entered into the code is revealed in the code, and there is software commercially available for people who would like to do this and see it for themselves. Well, there's a reason I'm sharing all of this now, and it ties into precisely what we're saying. All these codes work only in the Torah. Well, in the Torah and in the Bible code, there's information about who we are, about our relationship to a greater power, and about the DNA code within our bodies that lends even greater credence to the suggestion that we are built to house the power of God in this world, and that we have the ability within us to participate. I'm going to emphasize that word. It's not to control or manipulate. We are given the ability to participate in the events unfolding in our world. So I'd like to share with you two of the sequences that were found in the Bible code regarding DNA and who we are in this world. In the first sequence, from the book entitled The Bible Code 2 by Michael Drosnin, this is on page 132. There is a sequence that is read from right to left that literally says in Adam is the template or the model. In Adam, the template or the model for our bodies. Perpendicular to that, the Bible code literally says DNA code. Those are the words that are in the code. Statistically, the chances of these two statements being so close together suggest that they are placed there intentionally, that the DNA code of life is within Adam, the template or the model. The second example is perhaps even more compelling, because when the researchers entered into the software, the query, the creation of man, that is the way the query was stated, the creation of man, that was found in the Torah code in a vertical sequence. Crossing, actually intersecting that sequence, are the following words, and I'll read these to you verbatim. These are precisely the way they're found in the code. So the creation of man is the vertical code. Intersecting that are the words, I gave it to you as an inheritance. I am God. I gave it to you as an inheritance. I am God. So once again, in and of itself, this is interesting and maybe mysterious. Taken within the context of all the other things we've spoken of, it is yet another suggestion, another indication that something within us sets us apart from all other life. And it is that difference that gives us the power, that gives us the ability to make a difference in our world, both personally, individually, collectively, through our families, our communities, between nations. In 1936, one of Albert Einstein's students, her name was Phyllis Wright, she asked Albert Einstein a question. She asked if scientists pray. Albert Einstein answered, and he said, everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man. So once again, in his own way, Albert Einstein is saying to us, we're part of something else. There's something out there. We're part of a much greater existence, although we may not be able to see or understand precisely how that existence works in our world. A spirit vastly superior to that of man. It's the way we use the power of our spirit, supported by the knowledge that God's name is literally written in the message of ourselves, that sets us apart from all other forms of life. Well, it seems that we are actually coded for this divinity, if you will, on the one hand. At the same time, on the other hand, we are each given a choice as to whether or not and to what degree we exercise our powers of creation. So it's in the uniqueness of these two qualities, one, the power of God in bodies of earth, and number two, our ability to choose how we use our power. These are the things that seem to set us apart from all other life. And it's these powers as well that lead us to understand the fifth and the final mirror of relationship, the seen mirror of relationship, self-acceptance. So I invite you to join me now in our last segment describing the mirrors and understand how the ancients left to us the clues and the codes that show us perhaps the greatest mysteries of the universe are actually the mysteries of ourselves.